Hello and welcome. Scare Track. Scare Track Podcast.
Welcome to the Scare Track Podcast, the UK's first podcast dedicated to the scare attraction and haunted house industry. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Scare Track, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's get scared.
So this is where our adventure begins.
Oh my God!
I'm scared myself!
Kate Monroe is screaming. Spoiler alert, freaking awesome.
The
quality of the set was amazing.
Oh, I don't like it.
Hello and welcome to the Scare Track Podcast. My name is Hannah and today's episode is a spoiler-free review episode of The Last Retreat, a brand new horror indie film brought to us by the award-winning Scream Camp team. I'm also joined by Polly Allen, Scare Track guest host and co-director of Celluloid Screams Horror Film Festival. So let's begin the show.
You're listening to Scare Track.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Scare Track Podcast. Like I said in the intro, I'm joined today by Polly. Polly, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Mikey's here as well, just in case I freeze or mess up.
Hi, Polly.
Hello.
Hello, I'm here, but Hannah's in charge today.
I'm in charge. So I'm going to jump straight into it. The Last Retreat is a new found footage indie film that was created by the award-winning Scream Camp team based on their 2020 attraction, The Retreat. Mini plug, check out our vlog on YouTube so you can kind of get a feel what it is. We drop the link down below.
In the show notes.
So the film is, it's the first of its kind, really. It's a horror film that's born from a scare attraction in a found footage style. I think that really adds suspense to the movie. But Polly, what are your thoughts on found footage as a genre?
Oh, I'm a big fan of found footage. Like, obviously, you know, with the Last Retreat, like as far as I'm aware, if I'm understanding it correctly, it was filmed on like an iPhone, was it?
Yeah, it's literally all yes. filmed on just one iPhone 12.
Bloody hell.
So you've got to think to yourself, like, what's going to work brilliantly in that format? But it's not just out of necessity. I think that found footage is a fantastic way to go when you're looking at horror. Like, I'm a big fan of it. Like, I don't know if it may have fallen out of favour in some people's opinion, but I really think it does a lot for a film. Like, if you want to, I mean, if you think about it, like, if you want to engage your audience, best way to do that is to, like, properly immerse them in the action. And if you've got, like, a full-scale film production with all its kind of special effects and camera angles, edits, all that kind of thing, that actually, I think, can sometimes create a bit of a distance between the film and the audience. Mm. There's that old tagline, isn't there? I think it's from Last House on the Left, about, like, to avoid fainting, just keep repeating, it's only a movie. Well, like, when you've got all that kind of big scale production, all those, like, special effects and those kind of camera angles, they're kind of reminding you that it's only a movie. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Whereas if you present the action in that kind of found footage format, I do think it blurs the line between fiction and reality. You're kind of like witnessing the action in the context of our reality, really. And we're viewing it as we would ourselves, like through a camera phone. That's literally what they're filming on. We can allow ourselves to believe that not only did this really happen, but it could very well happen to us. And I think through that belief, you do become more engaged, you become more unsettled. And then when you pop in a few extra things, like a bit of gore and some jump scares, I think found footage is a winner. So, like, I can understand why it was used, and I think it was a very smart move, but it's not just to say that, you know, it was used because you had to. I think that it's a very, very good way to go for horror. Are you a fan of, like, found footage films and stuff, Hannah? Have you got, like, any favourites?
Oh, I am. I've always loved found footage. And saying that, I'm not a fan of Blair Witch. And I know that was, like, the first of its kind. But I think there just wasn't enough for me there to get scared of it. But I love found footage. Massive fan of Hell House. I don't know if you've seen that. And most recently, I stumbled across this one online and thoroughly enjoyed it. Host, which is a Zoom
my goodness.
One.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of that film. I was saying actually that I think you're probably a bit like me, Hannah, like probably a bit battle hardened when it comes to jump scares. Like you reach a point in your life where they don't quite get you as much.
Yeah.
But Host got me, I tell you.
I had to pause it because I'd ordered Chinese to come and I was on the edge of my seat and I thought, if someone knocks my door right now, I'm gonna full on scream. So I had to pause the film for a bit, which is mad because the film's only like 50 minutes long, and I had to stop it and calm down.
Wait for your food. No, I think Unhost is a brilliant example of how achievable this stuff is, really. Mm. As is The Last Retreat, because I've seen films that have done found footage, like what's it called, The Last Exorcism. I don't know if you've seen that one. I can't remember when it came out. But it's honestly, I don't think that The Last Exorcism, it would have made that much of a difference whether or not it was found footage. Mm. I don't think that the found footage style was used in much of an interesting way. I really don't think it added anything. It could have just been like shaky cam.
Yeah.
So I don't think it brought much to it. In fact, as I recall, I don't think they even bothered doing found footage in the sequel, which I haven't seen. But I think it does a lot for a film.
I think it adds rawness to it, where it makes it not more believable, but I'd say more relatable. I don't know if that makes sense. Definitely. Like, I use my phone. I go on Zooms. Like,
exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that. Definitely.
No, it does. It's exactly that. It's that line is blurred. You know, films, as much effort as people will put into to make them unique and try different things, you know, a lot of the time you're very conscious that you are just watching a film. But for found footage, especially, like, this is literally a camera phone, you know, as I say, it draws you in. It's more real.
Yeah,
I know what you mean. Raw is a good word, actually. It's quite raw. I agree. And I think for The Last Retreat, they really, really used it to their advantage. As I say, it's a smart move. It kind of, I don't know if you kind of felt this, Hannah, but I really felt it, especially in the beginning of the film. You know, spoiler free, forgot to say, the film's not out yet, so that's not really on. But in the early parts of the film, let's just call it that, in the early parts of the film, it's very authentic feeling. So there's a real sense of familiarity with these characters that you're seeing on screen.
Yeah, definitely.
It's very natural, isn't it? It's we've got like free-flowing dialogue. And I think that kind of dialogue really fosters some quite authentic and really nice, engaging character interactions. It just feels very real. And that authenticity is the main thing, really, that I felt when I was watching the beginning part of the film.
Yeah.
I almost feel like, I don't know if it was maybe, you know, maybe like ad-libbed dialogue a little bit. Improvisation, maybe, kind of adding into that.
We sort of had Callum, the creative director of Scream Camp and The Retreat, and Dean of the Dead, Dean Sharp of Dean of the Dead Productions. They both wrote a fantastic script that flowed really well, really nice. But when it came to actually filming and obviously using a found footage genre, we felt that some lines that would have worked perfectly in a quote-unquote normal style film just didn't quite seem as natural if someone is holding the camera or someone is looking at their mate instead of right down the lens and that sort of thing. So we sort of had a script, but were happy to sort of go off it if it felt natural. And you know, if you wanted to,
which is probably why it comes across so natural, like your interactions with each other, or the characters' interactions with each other, they all seem authentic. And I think that maybe that's more the ad-libbing, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. It was just what flowed nicely for the scene. You know, we sort of we come to realise that once you do a scene once and it feels good, you keep that one because it feels good. You might do it again. So yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, really, Polly, with it sort of having a script, but having that authentic freedom to be able to say what comes naturally within the scene.
Really comes across. It does. It really comes across. And again, when you mix that in with the found footage style, you've just it feels so real. You know, it's like I really do believe, like, these, I believe these characters, their friendships, this that they're embarking upon. As I say, I won't give too much away, but that first act, it sets up the film so well. And that's where I really did enjoy those kind of character interactions, and really funny as well. There's some really funny moments. To be honest, I would say, like, throughout the film, there are bits of comedy.
Yeah.
I found it, like, more so at the beginning, when, you know, everybody's kind of getting ready and everything. But also very snappy and well-paced is how I felt about the first kind of segment of the film. The editing's nicely paced. It moves well, and it really sets the scene for all the things that are to come.
Things coming,
definitely, yeah. Definitely. And those early scenes with the interactions, and it's setting the scene, and you're developing these characters. They managed to get a few jump scares in there for me as well, which took me by surprise because I wasn't expecting to jump until, you know, the chaos erupts.
Yeah, they, I know
they
exactly
had me at the,
what you mean.
At the start, like a snowball at one point. I've yelped because someone threw a snowball.
Yeah, I actually, one of my favourite jump scares is exactly in that kind of around that bit that you're describing, Hannah. It is before everything really gets going.
Yeah.
I really don't want to give it away because when people watch it, they'll see it, they're like, oh, there's a jump scare coming. But yeah, I literally can't say anything. Maybe telepathically I can communicate to you which bit I mean, Hannah.
That's I know which bit you mean.
it's ever so nicely done. And there's good comedy. And actually, it's very smart. I think with the snowball bit, I think that's in the trailer actually as well.
Yeah.
The bit where he kind of throws the snowball.
Oh, well, we can discuss that bit then.
Yeah, we can. Because I was going to say that there's a lovely moment there. And this is part of you guys just kind of being yourselves to a degree, I think. Because normally, especially when you're in the cinema, if you've got a massive jump scare that's just happened, the natural reaction that many, many people will have is that they laugh. They have a bit of a giggle because, like, oh, it got me. You can't help it. So there's a lovely moment where there is like a bit of a jump scare, but then everybody cracks up laughing. And I really liked that because I was laughing along with them. It's that authenticity, I tell you, because I feel like that jump scare might have happened for real that day. Like, you were probably messing about with each other, like, you know what I mean, scaring each other, being silly.
Definitely a few times that I was scared and I wasn't supposed to be scared yet, definitely.
That's just you, though.
There's a few times where I, again, spoiler free, trip over on one set, one scene. That's because I legit fell over. Like, it's dark, it's muddy, it's wet, it's been snowing. But again, those bits where I'm like, oh, bloody hell, keep it in because it's authentic, it's real, definitely. And like you say,
there was a part in
footage, it works.
Yeah, when we did the actual scare attraction, The Retreat, that the film is based on, when we did that, there's a noise that Mikey made when he got scared that I was begging him to recreate and put in the film, but you just can't make the noise.
It's just a natural reaction.
But it's just, it is Mikey's authentic natural reaction to being scared is to go, or something. And I was like,
wonderful.
please put it in, but they couldn't get him to recreate it without being scared.
Yeah. We I'm gonna need to hear that, basically.
It's definitely on the block. I'm sure it's on the
block. Yeah, we're gonna need that to happen. But it's interesting, isn't it, how, like you mentioned there about how it's based on the event itself. And that's a new one, really. Like, if you think about, you know, the horror films that do have some kind of footing in the industry, whether they're trying to portray like large scale haunts or even escape rooms, we've got something here where the jumping off point for it was a real event that actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Something I think it's bold of the Scream Camp team as well. Callum and his team, they've given us some fantastic events, and you know, the ritual was amazing, the retreat we all enjoyed as well. But the fact that they've said, right, we're going to make a horror film on it. Anywhere else, it's the other way around. It's sort of like there's a horror film and then Halloween Horror Nights make a maze on it. Or if there's going to be a Halloween / haunted attraction genre film, like you say, with escape rooms as well, there's nothing real as such it's been sort of developed on or based on. Whereas this is literally, if people, once this is on, fingers crossed, on Amazon Prime and or whatnot, and people can actually book a ticket and experience a type of event, not exactly the same, obviously, because
it's a great marketing idea.
It's a great marketing.
Watch the movie, live the experience.
Buy a ticket, like you say, Polly, it's pretty cool that it's sort of it's something new, it's something different. I don't think it's been done, especially not here in the UK before, an indie horror film based on an attraction that the same actual people have created. Mm. That's got to be a first, definitely a first.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it probably will be, won't it? But I do think that that, as I say, the especially the fan footage style was really, really very smartly deployed. Because as I say, I've seen it done with films that are kind of set out to be like, we're going to make a found footage film. And it's like, that didn't work as found footage, though, mate. Like, you're like, oh, you're making a documentary, are you? Oh, like, this did. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, very much so. So we've talked about how that you like that it's a found footage film, that you like the interactions. Is there anything else that you liked about the film or anything that you didn't like?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I found quite surprising, actually. I was really impressed with. I thought that the effects, like, I know, obviously it's kind of like a micro budget horror film. You know, it's not like you had hundreds of thousands of pounds to spend. But I thought the effects were excellent. I was really surprised at how the effects were very well put together. I don't know if some of this was kind of achieved in the editing, but kind of quite seamlessly portrayed. There were bits where I was like, oh, I wonder how they did that. I was really impressed with the effects. I thought they were really good. Kind of got me at a couple of points. I was like, oh God. Oh,
you know what? It was horrible watching it back as well. I edited the film from start to finish. I edited the trailer as well. There's some scenes that I'm not in. Again, I'm trying to keep all this spoiler free, but there's some scenes that I'm not in. So when I go back into the set and look at it all and edit it, it was, you know, Miss Kate Munro, who was on board to do the special effects for the film, did an amazing job. There was some really cool, gruesome, and I'm not going to say it's like it's a mega gruesome film as such. Like, it's not gore,
no,
gore porn, is it? But it's,
yeah,
there's just some bits where you go, "Ooh, I bet that wasn't nice," or "Ooh, that looks a bit sore." Kate did a great job of that. Again, we've got to be careful how much we say on air. We can always discuss this off air as well. And then once everyone's seen the film, I think it'd be cool to do a bit of another episode of maybe some people who have watched it in the industry all come on all together, and we can give a few of the spoilers. But
a spoilery discussion.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But some bits were we had to try and figure out how in the edit to make it look like something might have happened in that instant, whereas really it, you know, Kate's done her handiwork with a wound or whatever, I gotta be careful how much I say, but it is all camera angles and editing. It's amazing what you can do with smoke and mirrors.
That's fantastic. That's really interesting. Maybe I don't know if this is something that Kate might want to be doing more of, but like, personally, I was very impressed with the effects. So I think that that'd be really cool to see more from her if that's something that she's looking at doing.
Yeah, definitely.
How are you with gore, Hannah? Are you like more?
Oh, I love a bit of gore.
Or jump scares, or yeah, you like a bit of gore as well.
I love gore. It doesn't scare me, I think it's beautiful in a very weird way. But it's jump scares and things in the dark that scare me. And I think that's why Host got me so much.
Yeah, I'm not good with... like jump scares can really get me sometimes, and as a rule I love gore, I'm the same as you, it doesn't really get me too much, or it doesn't scare me. Supernatural horror really scares me as a rule. That's yes. What tends to get me more often.
Exactly the same.
I do kind of struggle with that a bit sometimes, but I mean we touched on the jump scares with this film, didn't we? It has some quite good ones.
Definitely. Definitely some things where you're on the edge of your seat.
Yes. Yeah. Really nice bits of tension. You know, it's not easy to get that right. That kind of really, when you're looking at jump scares, it's a pattern of tension and release. Mm. And you don't want to keep people hanging too long. You don't want to deliver it too early. Mm. There's a real skill to it. And I think this film definitely had that.
Yeah,
Had some really well-timed jumps, yeah. And lots of creepy shots in the woods, which, you know,
the location was perfect, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say everything in the woods now, you're like, well, that's reminiscent of Blair Witch. You could say that about literally anything in the woods.
Yeah,
literally.
But no, it is, it's a fantastic location. It seemed to me that... It kind of had everything, really, that you would have needed, although I expect it was pretty cold.
Yeah, it was really cold. But one, it's a little bit like, you're cold, but then you start filming, then you start getting the adrenaline going, and then you walk up the same bank half a dozen times, you start warming up because you keep falling down it. So, it was chilly, but it was worth it. Because, like you say, yeah, the location... You know, for the event, it's pretty cool, but it also goes on screen well as well.
Yeah.
Heading back to obviously the jump scare thing as well, it was something that it's concerning because the decision, Callum and Dean, they made the decision to make it fan footage, which was like we said earlier, it worked really well, but in horror movies, or even in scare mazes or haunted houses, the visual jump scare is usually accompanied by either a lighting effect or, in horror movies and whatnot, by a sound effect or the music, changing music. Whereas with found footage, you can't really do that because we didn't in this anyway, because it just doesn't make sense. It's like you're like a group of people are vlogging their weekend, so it wouldn't make sense to heighten the jump scare with a violin string or anything, because it would have made it less authentic. So I'm glad that the film managed to get some jump scares in solely based on the visual and no other components helping it out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense, and I think that there's a lot of creativity to that, to kind of, because you're absolutely right. Like when you've not got any kind of non-diegetic music. I sometimes forget the difference between diegetic and non-diegetic is where it's not coming from the action in front of you, I think.
Right.
Apologies if I've got that the wrong way around. but in the absence of that, you're right. Like, you've not got that sudden spike of audio where you're like, and that is where you do need to. That is where you do need to get quite creative. I think it did that. Absolutely, I do think it did that. And you know, it's creepy going through the woods in the dark, anyway, isn't it?
Oh yeah, mega creepy. Just
nothing but a torch.
Yeah, and that was it. Again, filming wise, we didn't use any quote unquote film lighting. It was a torch. We just used what would be the most natural.
Well, that's probably why it works. I think if the whole woods was lit up, you'd be like, well, this isn't a camera phone torch, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. No, that you're exactly right. And that's precisely that whole thing about like the kind of artifice of big scale cinema brings you out of it, brings you out of the feeling, you know, because if you were there for real, all you would have is a torch.
Yeah, definitely.
Which we were, because we did it.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it's authentic to the actual experience as well.
Yeah, no, that's right. No, it's interesting, actually. I apologise profusely if this is a ridiculous tangent. I shall keep it brief.
That's okay,
I promise.
We like tangents.
But, you know, you were talking about, like, you know, no music, no lighting effects, you know, not none of those things. All you had, you used what you had, what you brought with you, you know?
Yeah.
And there was... There was a filmmaking movement, it was called Dogma 95, and it was led by two directors, Lars von Trier and Thomas Vinterberg. Lars von Trier has actually found some success since then. He's quite a well-known director. I don't know what happened to Thomas Vinterberg. Sorry, Thomas. They completely cast aside conventional filmmaking, and they set out these rules, which they then... at the time, called the Vow of Chastity. And it meant that shooting was only allowed to take place on location. You were only allowed to use props that were there. Mm. You weren't allowed any artificial sound, no artificial lighting. You were only allowed to use handheld cameras. And the film had to take place in the here and now. Basically everything that is happening is kind of presented to you in not real time necessarily, but, you know, not jumping ahead 10 years, for example. The whole point behind it was that the movement was interested in presenting feelings of truth and realism, you know, that kind of aesthetic. It's interesting because I do think that, I mean, I don't think much happened with that movement, to be honest. There were a couple of titles that came out of it. The first one, in my opinion, is the best one, which is called Festen, which translates to The Celebration. It's not really a horror film, but it's very raw and very powerful. And it really demonstrates how these techniques can come together to create something that can be quite unsettling.
Yeah.
And really, when you think about it, found footage films, especially ones such as this, actually has a lot in common with that kind of what was at the time quite a punk movement of filmmaking.
Definitely.
Yeah, like that kind of raw footage. You're not allowed to use any extra stuff. I think actually, technically, under the rules that Dogma 95 set out, you weren't allowed to have things like murder and gore. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, they considered it to be, what did they call it? Superficial action.
Right, okay.
Which, you know, whatever.
I wouldn't want people killing people for real.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly it, isn't it? But yeah, other than that, those principles, like focus on the story, focus on the actors, focus on what they're doing, and then you let the rest speak for itself.
Yeah.
In a sense. So I think that's what The Last Retreat really did.
Yeah.
Sorry, apologies for that. Random tangent.
No, it's nice. You learn something new every day.
Yeah, we've all learned something. Yeah. So we've talked loads about what we've loved about the film. Is there anything that you didn't like?
I think there were one or two things about the film that didn't work all that well for me. Although one thing I will say, as I said, I'm very keen not to spoil any of it because the film's not out yet, so it's not really fair. Because I felt that the overall premise of the film may have needed a few tweaks in order to help it better translate into a film. Because you've got to think about, as we said before, the starting point here was like the event, you know, it was the was the attraction. And I don't think that necessarily can directly translate into film. And there have, without giving too much away, I think tweaks have been made. And I think to a large degree they did work, but I do think there were one or two things that could have still been tweaked, maybe just to help it further. But as I say, it's tricky to talk about that without spoiling it.
Yeah, it is hard.
I don't know if you guys felt this. It's interesting because when I was doing it, I felt like I was in a film.
Yeah, big time.
I was so immersed that when the finale happened in the cabin, I closed all the curtains and hid under the duvet, and they hadn't come up with a plan of what they were to do.
If you were under
if
the duvet.
Someone was under the duvet.
Oh. So
because I was so, at one point I was just walking around with a shovel like no one's coming near me because I got so immersed in it.
Definitely. It did feel like And the show has sort of changed and grown over the weeks that they were running it, obviously when they were allowed to run it as well. But it definitely does feel like you're in a horror movie. And I think that's heightened by the fact that obviously you are in a cabin in the woods. And there is only the two of you. It's a very different style of event compared to going through a haunted hayride or a scare maze or even a piece of immersive theatre. This is very much, it's just you two in the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of night.
In the middle of the night and stuff happening to you.
It's inherently quite cinematic, isn't it, when you think about all those tropes that we see in horror films. Taking the element of isolation, a cabin in the woods, running through the woods. As I say, you can't help but think of Blair Witch. It's just bloody Blair Witch.
It's when you
kind of bring all these things together, and I think that's what made the event at the time feel so cinematic. And I wonder whether, you know, the team had felt that and they'd drawn inspiration, so it was almost like, in many ways, this is a natural step to bring it into the realm of a horror film, almost, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it was a very natural step. Like, I can see how it's a great marketing idea for future renditions of the scare attraction, The Retreat. Mm-hmm. But it's just the way that it just played out as we were in a horror movie, it just makes sense for there to be a horror movie now.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, yeah.
It just makes sense.
Yeah. And then, of course, I don't know whether you guys have noticed this divide, almost, you could say, that because obviously if you think about the term horror, you've got all sorts of stuff that comes under that. If you think about, you know, the passions of that we share of, like, you know, the scare attraction industry, but also horror films, actually occupying the space where, you know, you understand and love both of those things, not many people do.
No, that's very true, actually. I think we've touched on this before.
Well, Mikey doesn't like horror films.
Well, no, like, I'm a huge scare attractions, haunted houses, that kind of thing. You know, I've done nearly 500 now. Like, I've done loads. I love them. They're what I'm so passionate for. But if Hannah says pick a movie, I never pick a horror.
And if I force him, he has to watch it in the day.
Oh yeah, I get too scared at night time.
Oh, is that the deal breaker? It's got to be in the day,
and I have to watch something nice and cuddly and cozy afterwards. but yeah, it's true. And then when I've been to horror cons and speaking to people who are, you know, they are horror fanatics. They have Freddy tattooed to their arm. They are dressed up as Jason. They're real into their horror films. And they've never been through a scare attraction in their life, and they don't know what they are.
And some
wouldn't want to. It's
that's exactly it. That's exactly right. It's almost like not aware, and it's not a bad thing. It's not to say like, oh, what, you don't know like that. Not that at all. It's just very interesting how these two things that you think would be the perfect Venn diagram of, you know, a person who is into horror would love both of these things, but it's not the case at all. It's either because they either don't know about it, or they wouldn't want that happening to them for real. You know, they would rather be watching it in a film, which is totally understandable. So that's why I think with this film, there could be a degree of people seeing it and then being like, "What, you can actually do this?"
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I think it's cool. It might help bridge that divide a little bit.
If I hadn't already done it and seen the film, and then was like, "What, we can do this?"
Yeah,
I'd do it.
yeah. So I think it's interesting. I wonder whether, you know, projects like this could maybe help to further, like, to kind of bridge that divide a little bit. You know, to connect those two worlds. Because it's, you know, it's all horror, it's all scary, it's all wonderful, it's all creative, it's all exciting. And I do think, although, you know, you can't force someone to like something that, like, you with horror films, Mikey, you can't...
Can't force can't me to force like anything, it. Hannah. You heard it here. Stop trying to force me to watch horror films.
Wow.
but it is
maybe
true,
maybe you've
though.
Just not found one you really like.
Maybe, yeah.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
I think it's also gets exciting the fact that you know, the Scream Camp team, they've only been going since 2019. They pulled off a very, not an extreme event, but it's definitely sort of a out of the box style of event. Then they created The Ritual, then they created The Retreat, and now they've made a movie. They've done a lot in, you know, two and a bit years.
I'm excited to see what they do
mm. next, absolutely. But also as well, talking about making, you know, a UK scare attraction into a UK indie horror film, you could sort of start get excited of what could other places potentially do. Like, could Tully's make a film out of their wastelands? I know they probably could. Or could Fear at Avon Valley make a film about Vita Nova? I mean, they sort of do it with any advertising. Anyway, like, you know, they make some fantastic trailers for their stuff, especially Ooh. Tully's and Scare Kingdom, things like that. But there's definitely scope there, isn't there, to, even if it's not a full film, it could be a short or just a vignette of...
I don't know if it would translate as well as The Last Retreat.
No, I think it would translate differently. I think it would be something different. I think nothing would be as raw and as authentic as what The Last Retreat is, purely because of the style of the event. But, you know, it's exciting just to think of, you know...
Possibilities.
The possibilities, you know.
Yeah.
The Scream Camp team could definitely be becoming trendsetters, is what I'm trying to say, I think.
No, definitely. I think that's a good point there. And, I mean, it is, of course, when you think about the kind of large-scale sets and... things that people that kind of run these bigger scare attractions have access to, that you could just put in a film or literally shoot a film in there. Obviously, like you say, it's the woods in this case, you know, that's it. That's your backdrop. But it is interesting to think about what could be done, you know, with everything else. I think what Hannah was saying about, like, how, you know, how would it translate? Because sometimes, like, not all that well necessarily. It's not always gonna, you know, appeal to horror fans in that way. But I do think that the tropes that you sometimes see, you know, like, there might be something that reminds you of a much loved horror film. Because it's interesting that you mentioned Scare Kingdom. I remember looking back on, I think it must have been a trailer or something that they created. And it wasn't kind of, I wasn't looking at it and thinking, like, this reminds me of the feeling of watching a horror film, not at all. But that aesthetic, those kind of characters, those kind of storylines and things that do remind you to some degree of horror films. So that's what kind of drew me in a way.
Yeah. Just looks visually good on a screen.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is. It's interesting to see where it could go, for sure. But yeah, I think you're right. It's never going to quite be as raw as this, is it?
No, definitely. Has the authenticity and the rawness, definitely, The Last Retreat.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, it does, for sure.
So any final thoughts? Anything you wanted to add?
I think, really, for me, it's been a lovely experience watching the film, because I don't believe that you should compare your life and yourself to others, because I think that can be very damaging. But one thing I will say is that I think this film is a really great example of how life doesn't necessarily have to stand still in what's currently happening in the world. I find it incredibly uplifting and inspiring to see this happening. You know, you've gone out and made a film, you've not put your dreams on hold, you've kind of made it happen, obviously in a safe way. But you've made that happen. And as I say, I do think you should be kind to yourself. You shouldn't put loads of pressure on yourself to achieve things during the pandemic, because it's a horrible situation. We were talking earlier about how it saps your motivation.
Yeah.
How kind of crap it makes you feel. But I think you can still be inspired by others, and I think you can still draw inspiration and motivation from what other people are doing and how they're getting through it. No matter what you've achieved during the pandemic, you're an absolute star for just making it through. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Let's make that clear. But I do think that you can look at something like this and be like, oh, wow, yeah, life does go on.
Well, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
The scare attraction was created in the first lockdown, ran in between that and the second.
It was born out of,
and then the film was created in the third. Like, yeah, they created it so that they could open socially distant. Like, it's just insane how in a time where the world has stood still, these guys have like ran with it. It's great.
Yeah, I think that was my main takeaway from it, really. It was really positive to kind of look at it and be like, yeah, I know they made this happen, and it's no small thing. Definitely. It's a big deal.
Fair play to the Scream Camp team.
Yeah, fair play. Perfect. So I think that brings us to the conclusion to wrap this up. Polly, huge thank you for joining me today.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. It's really nice to be back on. And as I was saying before, we've never had one like all together, have we? It was really nice to have one on with you as well, Hannah. I've really enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you. And Mikey, thank you for being my safety net for my first lead interview.
Anytime. First of many, I reckon.
Oh, God.
Definitely.
Pressure's on.
Yes. No, definitely. I second that.
And everyone listening at home, as soon as The Last Retreat is available, we'll let you know via our social media pages.
Unlocked Vision, proud sponsors of the Scaretrack podcast. UVE are a multi-award-winning themed attraction and design company, providing bespoke themed attractions, theming, events, and experiences. Contact UVE today by visiting unlockedvision.com. Now, let's return back to the show. And remember, let's get scared!
There we go, folks. First of all, a huge thank you to Polly and Mikey for joining me, and thank you all for listening. As soon as The Last Retreat is available for download, we will let you know via our social media platforms. Just search for Scaretrack on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and Facebook. A huge thank you for listening, and let's get scared.